Okay, and welcome back. Just a marvelous conversation with Al Teitelbaum tonight, taking a look back at Hollywood. Al is the last of the legends, and he is very much with us tonight. Al, some of the people... we didn't talk about Daryl Zanuck at 20th Century. Mr. Zanuck was what kind of a man?
Zanuck was, again, a tough character. You know, he had been the top producer at Warner Brothers, and when he left, when they changed the 20th Century Fox films, he was put in charge of it. He was a tough motion picture man, but he knew the business.
And is it safe to say that, all these men were clients of yours?
Everyone that I've talked about so far, yes.
And is it also safe to suggest that the majority of them didn't always buy furs for their wives?
Well, I don't know about the majority, but a lot of them did.
Right. It was kind of, I guess, in those days, expected, wasn't it, of these big power brokers? And they were godlike figures to, I don't know if it was necessarily revered as a practice, but it was accepted that they would have their own quiet, and it was quiet, I guess, wasn't it, for the most part?
It was usually quiet. Every so often something happened, but quite often the wives knew that who their girlfriends were.
Right.
And as long as it was kept quiet, nobody said anything.
The casting couch was employed by not all the studio chiefs, but I guess some of the harder characters used it quite a bit.
By too many of them, actually.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some of the people that you knew very well. We talked about Mario Lanza. Maybe another time we'll spend more time about Mario, but suffice it to say that you played an enormously important role in helping his career stay afloat after the catastrophe at MGM, which in my opinion to this day I view as the greatest loss of a musical talent at its peak, not completely lost, but certainly turned it in the wrong direction that certainly Hollywood has ever been guilty of. But
yeah, it would have been a shame, because if he had made The Student Prince, it would have been a wonderful movie. Although they used his, you know, they used his voice.
Right.
His singing, I should say.
Right.
But
right.
With Mario's personality, the picture would have come to life.
Right. It flopped as it was.
Yeah, it really, you know, in fact, the only thing that was good about that movie was his voice.
True.
His singing.
Yeah. All right. Clark Gable.
A very nice gentleman. The first time I knew him, he was married to an acting coach, and she got him a job at Universal. And at that time, he would be playing in these westerns as the bad guy.
Hmm.
And nobody thought of him as a handsome lover. And then later on, he divorced her,
mm-hmm.
and he married a gal from Texas, a socialite there. And I think she actually changed his image. Because he dressed differently, he looked differently.
Hmm.
I never did any business with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he married Carol Lombard, and that was a love match. And it was very funny, in fact. It was not only a real love match, but they had a lot of fun together.
Uh-huh.
I remember one Christmas, he came into the store and he said to me, "I want one of the junkiest furs that you have." And I didn't understand what he was talking about. And he said, "I want one of the stuff that you use in the studios, you know, for studio rentals, you know." And we went through different things, and he picked out a stole that looked like it was moth-eaten, which we used to show somebody that, you know, that had fallen on hard times, but still had retained an old fur, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's what I want. And he said, I'm going to give it to Carol for Christmas. And I thought, gee, I'm going to Christmas. I don't understand this. He brought in an old box from Sears Roebuck and asked that we wrap it up and then put the fur in that old box. And he gave her that for Christmas.
They used to prank each other.
Oh, yeah. In turn, I think it was for his birthday. It may have been, you know, some other occasion. She bought an old broken-down Model T Ford, and I mean broken down, and she presented this to him for the occasion. I think it was his birthday. And then he spent a fortune taking that old Model T Ford and having it fixed up so that it ran perfectly and looked like a brand-new car.
Funny. Of course, Carol was lost to the world in that plane crash outside of Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. In fact, she was wearing my mink coat when they found her body. That was a tragedy. She went on a bond to sell bonds, you know, for war bonds during the war.
They say Clark never got over that, and I guess...
I saw him after that, and I'll tell you, he really fell apart after. He really loved her.
Yeah. Yeah.
What he did is then he went and joined the Army.
Yeah.
He didn't have to, but he did.
And he flew combat missions as a photographer over Europe.
Some of the people I knew that knew him said he was trying to get himself killed for grief of her.
Mm-hmm.
He was grieving so badly.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought he was a perfect gentleman, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he had various affairs during the years that, you know, I had met him, but you never heard anybody say anything bad about Clark Gable.
Was he a big fellow? How tall was he?
Oh, he was big. He was a big, husky man.
Some of the stars, and of course this goes back to the skill of the cinematographers, like Alan Ladd was quite short, I guess.
Alan Ladd was very short. In fact, I remember the first time I saw him in a scene where they had him like on a steps so that he was in this love scene with this girl and she was, you know, let's say a head taller than him.
He was on steps?
He was on steps. They had a wooden, like two steps, and he was on the second step.
Gee.
So that he would be a little taller than the girl. You know? Now, when you saw him in the movie, you never saw him as being, you know, short.
Well, he's 30 feet tall, and he looks pretty big up there.
Well, he did because of the way he was photographed.
Yeah. It's funny. Errol Flynn.
He was a character. He was a lot of fun. I'm talking about in his early days, not later on when booze got to him and wrecked his career.
In the late, mid-50s,
But, he was full of fun, and he was always joking on the set, and he enjoyed making films, you know. And he didn't take himself too seriously, which I thought was nice, you know.
So it looks like, I've read a couple biographies, he enjoyed every day of his life to the fullest.
Oh, yeah, he partied all the time. He was on the make for every good-looking girl in Hollywood.
And probably had a lot of success, too.
I'm sure he did. I know he did.
There's Al's discretion again talking. But my grandfather, who married into the family when he's before that, he was the chef at Ciro's.
Uh-huh.
And there was a book called Out with the Stars, which has a wonderful photographic history of Hollywood's most famous restaurants. And I guess my grandfather, he told me he was at Ciro's for 7 or 8 years in the late 40s and early 50s and knew Gable and Flynn and all of that. And he knew Mario, of course, quite well from just him coming in there. And there was a delicatessen owned by a guy named Louis Bernardi. And I guess it was kind of an in place for some of the people. And I used to hear a lot of stories about that, too. And I remember asking my grandfather once about Mario. I said, what was Mario Alonso like? And when I said his name, it was almost as if someone had slapped him and taken him back. And he kind of rolled his head back. And he had been, he was a Frenchman, and he came over here when he was a kid. And he said, oh my God, what a beautiful man he was. The first words out of his mouth.
Yeah. A lot of people felt that way. You know,
all right.
Was your grandfather or your father-in-law?
Grandfather.
Grandfather. The Shiro's was owned by Hover.
Fred.
I can't remember.
Fred Hoverman?
No.
Hover?
I think it was Hover. I can't remember his exact name. And the two important nightclubs at that time were the Macambo, owned by Charlie Morrison, and Herman Hover, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Herman Hover.
Yeah. Now, both of them were customers of mine. What would happen would be when they sign a female star.
All right, hold on. We're going to stop right there and come right back and pick it up with female star, Al. We have to do a little business here. We'll come back just a couple minutes with Mr. Al Teitelbaum. Furs by Teitelbaum. All right. The Macambo and Ciro's, the top two Hollywood restaurants and nightclubs. And they had stages and they had performers. It was different back then. All right, you're telling us a story about a young starlet.
Well, what they would do when, let's say that they would hire a, you know, female singer.
Right.
And not usually, but quite often, they would give her a fur coat as a gift or perhaps part of the salary that she was getting.
Ah.
And the deal that they would make with me would be that they would give me half cash and the other half we were to use, you know, in the restaurant
in
or
trade,
the nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, we were always entertaining in both Ciro's and the Macambo. Because I had to use up the money that they owed me.
Sure.
And in fact,
well, you probably ate a lot of the food my grandfather prepared.
I don't doubt that at all. You know, it was funny. One time, I remember there was a singer in France who was very important by the name of Edith Piaf.
Oh yeah.
You remember, know that name?
I remember the Sparrow of France or something.
Right.
A little sparrow.
Well, Charlie Morrison hired her, and he said to me that he wanted to have a fur coat made for her. So she came into the store, and I took her measurements, and I took the measurements and took it into our factory after she had left and told them to make the pattern for it. And about 15 minutes later, the foreman came to me and said, it's impossible. You made a mistake. I said, what do you mean? He said, this is not a woman's body. This is the body of an 11-year-old girl. I said, these are the measurements. He said, it's not possible. Well, she was tiny. She really had the body of a child rather than a woman. But when she sang, she sang so soulfully, and she sang all these sad songs. I loved her singing. I had seen her the first time in Paris, and I thought she was wonderful.
Yeah, unique, very unique sound. You're
oh,
right.
Yeah.
I had no idea she was that small. They did. That's why they called her the little sparrow or something.
Well, she was a little tiny thing.
Tell us the story of, we're going to talk about Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin here, but they were used to perform at these clubs, as many of the big stars did, especially when they were starting out. What was the story about Martin and Lewis at Ciro's when Mario came in one night? Remember that one?
I don't remember. What I do remember about the two of them, mostly that sticks in my mind, was the two of them, when they had first signed to make the first motion picture at Paramount,
mm-hmm.
and they were performing at a nightclub called Slapsy Maxie's, and they literally tore the nightclub apart. They had everybody going from table to table, joining them in a Congo line all over the place. I'd never seen anything like it before.
You were there.
We were there. My wife and I were there with two other couples. And it was a crazy night.
That had to be about 1950, 49, 50?
Probably. I'm just not sure of the year. Mm-hmm. They had not made their first motion picture yet. And of course, Jerry Lewis, his wife, Patty was a customer of mine, and he would come into the store, and really he acted as crazy in the store as he did on the screen.
Really? So he didn't put it on all the time. That's how he was much of the time.
That's the way he was. And of course, I've seen him, pictures of him. I know he's suffering horribly from, I don't know what the disease is that he's got, but I've watched him on television, the way he's, blossomed out. He's so heavy in his face and so forth,
Yeah.
It's pathetic. He's done a great job with the raising money for the children,
Don't know how much he's raised. What has he raised?
Incredible millions of dollars,
Yeah, amazing. When you would go out to the nightclubs back then, so many of them, it was elegant. People dressed up. And I wasn't there, but I've looked at the book, Out with the Stars, and it's a wonderful book because they've got these great publicity photographs of inside the clubs of all the celebrities eating dinner, and you can get a magnifying glass. There's such high-resolution pictures. And look at the matchbook covers and the little detail work. It looked like everyone was dressed to the absolute best.
Everybody was. And nobody would think of going to a nightclub unless you were dressed to the teeth,
Right. And so elegant and just beautiful. They truly were beautiful people.
They were. And I must say that, to me it's a terrible shame that all that has changed. It was a different era, a different world. I think a motion picture star should look like a motion picture star.
And act like one.
But that doesn't seem to be the story anymore, but that's the way it is today.
Yeah, indeed.
But when
go ahead.
Wherever you went in the past, if you went to a theater, for example, I'm not even talking about, the opening nights of a premiere.
Uh-huh.
But if you went to a theater, you would see the motion picture people dressed glamorously, both the men and the women. Today you go to a show and you see people come in sweatshirts.
Yeah. Indeed. Stand by, Al. We'll come back. Just a little bit of a break here. And then two more sections to go. And I really thank you for staying up and doing this. You have made a lot of new friends tonight. Stand by. I'll be right back with Mr. Al Teitelbaum. Okay, let's get right back to our guest, Mr. Al Teitelbaum. So Jerry Lewis was a real character on and off the screen. He has had an incredible career and has done some wondrous things for his fellow human beings over the years, and no one can take that away from him. Did you have any dealings with Dean Martin?
I had met Dean Martin, but I never had any business dealings with him.
Mm-hmm. And back to the nightclubs for a minute. When you'd go out to these clubs, and what was the one... There was another one I've seen pictures of. Doggone it. Earl Carroll's, was it Moulin Rouge?
No, Earl Carroll had another one, which was a more glamorous show. He had, Earl Carroll, of course, had been very important in Broadway in New York, and he opened Earl Carroll's show on Sunset Boulevard.
Big floor shows, right?
Big floor shows. The Macambo and Ciro's were much smaller, and they were more intimate than Earl Carroll's shows. Mm-hmm.
And when you'd go out on a Friday or Saturday night, you would see lots of people from the films, correct? I mean, that's where they would go to hang out.
They would go to hang out and also to be seen and photographed.
And that's where the photographs in the book come to. If you folks can find a copy of this book, it's called Out with the Stars. It is marvelous. If you love old Hollywood, it's wonderful. Yeah, so they'd go out, they'd basically be parading. I'm sure their studio publicity staffs were elated when they'd get photographed.
Oh, sure.
And would they say, "Hi, Al, how are you?" And they do, you must, yeah, this must have been particularly amusing for you to see your furs in probably every club you went into.
Well, I enjoyed that. It, you know, it was a great satisfaction to see the things that you made on the people that were the most important people in the motion picture industry.
And to some, they were the most important people in the world. That's how big the films used to be.
They really were at that time.
Yeah. Ronald Reagan, former President Reagan. Now, you had some dealings with him, I guess.
Well, actually, when I first met him, his wife, he was married to Jane Wyman. And at that time, they were both working for Warner Brothers. Jane Wyman was the star. And he was, when I first met him, he was just one of the good-looking boys that was, you know, signed by Warners, and they put them in various motion pictures.
This was after the war or before the war?
This was before the war.
Uh-huh.
And I had lunch with the two of them, and then I had lunch with him many times. I just couldn't believe when he first became governor. I mean, the whole thing seemed so incredible to me.
He wasn't really, he was a big star, but there was something about Ronald Reagan that didn't have the edge that Flynn or Gable had. He was kind of just a nice guy.
He was a nice guy. He really was a nice guy. But how that made him, you know, he became governor because he had some very smart people who wanted to control California, and
so they did.
And so they did. And he was great as long as he had a script. I must say this, he looked more presidential than anybody I had ever seen before.
He did, and when he delivered a speech, he didn't write them. He delivered some great speeches.
He did.
Of his skills.
The problem was that when they would catch him off guard, he didn't come off quite that well.
No, well, look at our current president. And when you catch him on guard, he doesn't come off quite that well either. What we have now is, all right. Betty Davis, one of the most powerful actresses of all time in the entertainment business.
Right.
What did you know about Betty?
Well, of course, I liked her. She knew what she wanted. She was one of the first to take a stand against making a picture that she thought wasn't worthy of her.
Uh-huh.
And
see, most of the stars under contract, they did what they were told or they were out on their ear.
They had to do it, you know?
Yeah.
But she balked and finally... she got what she wanted. But, you know, Warner Brothers, of course, Jack Warner ran the studio himself, really. I mean, he was the boss there.
Right.
And I remember when, which was very funny, because they decided to do Casablanca, although I don't think that was the name of it originally. And Jack Warner wanted... Ann Sheridan and George Raft to do the movie.
George Raft.
George Raft was a big star at that time.
Yeah.
He had been in all the gangster movies with James Cagney, and he was a big Warner Brothers star.
Mm-hmm.
And both he and Ann Sheridan did not want to do the movie. And they squawked so much that the movie was made with, at that time, a secondary actor, Humphrey Bogart.
Hmm.
And
So George Raft's ego gave Humphrey Bogart his break.
That's right. And that movie is today one of the motion picture classic movies.
Yeah, it is. Did Jack Warner get along with Errol?
Warner did not get along too well with a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, I've read about that, and A pretty amazing scene. You know, when you look back on it, I guess it's incredible that so much got done with so many egos involved. But that was the studio system. You signed on and you literally became, it's like joining the military. You became property, right?
That's the way you were treated half the time, which was a shame.
Yeah.
Now, Harry Warner, everybody liked.
He was sort of the business side of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joan Crawford was a very good friend of yours.
Yes, she was.
Now, she's gotten a bad rap over the years, too.
Well, you know, I've watched and listened to some of the things that were said, and I don't believe any of them. Because I was at her home many, many times, and the story of abusing, you know, the child and so forth.
Right.
All I can say is I never saw any of it.
She,
and neither did my wife.
She was, how would you describe her? Gracious, intelligent, witty, kind, warm, friendly, what?
All of it.
Really?
Yeah, I thought she was a great person.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll come back and just a minute, Al, I want to see what you have to say about another one you knew, the beautiful Ava Gardner. As we continue our final segment coming up with Mr. Al Teitelbaum after this. All right. Let's get right back to Al Teitelbaum, who is, again, an eyewitness to one of the great, truly great cultural, social epochs in modern history, that being the golden age of Hollywood. You can't go anywhere on the planet without people knowing what you mean when you say Hollywood. And Al was there right through the middle of it. And we so much appreciate you being here tonight, Al. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. A couple more names. The king of radio comedy, Jack Benny. Mary Livingston, his wife, of course.
They were very nice people. I liked him, and he would come into the store, and anything that she wanted, you know, it was very funny, because you saw him in all of the radio and television shows. It was Jack Benny, the tight-fitted, cheap man, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He was just the reverse. Anything that she wanted, she could have without any question.
She was a pretty nice lady, too.
Yeah, she was a nice lady.
Yeah.
And she brought in a lot of customers. She brought in a lot of her friends.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody you didn't know?
Oh, I'm sure there were.
Ava Gardner. Tell us about Ava Gardner.
Well, Ava Gardner, I thought, and I still think, when she was young, when I first met her, she was probably the most beautiful woman I had ever seen in my life.
More so than Rita Hayworth and Susan Hayward.
So.
And
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was the most beautiful. Rita Hayworth was very attractive. Hedy Lamarr was attractive. You know, Greta Garbo. Those people were attractive. But I think Ava had something, I don't know. She had a magnetism that was entirely different. And she was a very sweet girl. I thought a lot of her.
So you must not, I mean, when she married Frank Sinatra, it doesn't sound like it would have been a match.
Well, I couldn't understand it, frankly. And
Sinatra was kind of a punk, wasn't he? I don't mean to put him down, but that's what everyone seems to say.
What can I say about Frank Sinatra? His first wife, Nancy, I thought was a great lady. I really liked her.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Sinatra was a tough man, and I didn't like a lot of the characters that he had around him, you know?
Mm-hmm. I understand.
They were just tough people.
I understand what you're saying.
And to me, I think he was very much in love with Ava Gardner, but it just seemed to me like a very strange marriage. But then, you know, who knows what goes on in people's lives?
Right. Right.
But I thought she was wonderful, you know. And then years later, my late wife and I were in Spain, and we had lunch with her. And she was living in Spain at the time, and you could see where, you know, she changed a lot. She was doing quite a bit of drinking, and it showed on her.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her if she's going to come back to Hollywood and make movies, and she said, no, no. She said, I hate Hollywood. I'm going to live here. And I don't think she ever did come back.
I think she died in Spain, didn't she? Can't remember.
Yeah. Well,
something.
But I liked her. She was a very nice person.
Marilyn Monroe.
Marilyn Monroe was a very sweet girl and was the saddest person I ever met in my life.
Really?
I don't know how else to say it except that she was. I've never seen anybody that was so unsure of herself as Marilyn. She did not believe she had any real talent. In other words, I remember a couple of times I would be in her dressing room after she was being made up.
Mm-hmm.
And, she said, you know, I don't look right. You know, and I would say, you look beautiful. Oh, she says, you say that because you're my friend. I said, no, no, you are beautiful. And, they would be calling from the set for her to come on. And she said, I can't go on like this. I look terrible. And, you know, to me, it was incredible. She just didn't believe that she did not believe that she looked that good. She did not believe that she did a good job of acting. She always said she, and which she did later, she said she's going to go to an acting school and learn more, although the studio spent a lot of time with her.
Mm-hmm.
But,
no self-confidence, no self-esteem.
No. I remember when she married, Joe DiMaggio.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I really saw her happy. And I thought, boy, this is going to be it because, he was very devoted to her. Mm-hmm. And she was madly in love with him. And I don't know, you know, who knows what happens between a husband and a wife, but it was sad. Although later on when after she was dead, he took over the funeral arrangements and everything else.
Any thoughts about her death? A lot of rumors.
Well, there are all kinds of rumors, you know. And, you know, the stories about her and...
The Kennedys.
Both the Kennedys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And...
was that known about back then?
Yeah, it was known that she was very friendly with the Kennedys. But, you know, mm-hmm. Who knows?
Right.
Obviously, there was much more that was never really made public, although a lot of it has been made public, you know. But I liked her, and I thought she was very sweet, and my wife liked her. My wife said after, you know, if we would have dinner one night together,
mm-hmm.
Still would say, you know, she needs to go to a psychiatrist because she hates herself, you know. And the unfortunate thing was that, you know, her past history had been rough,
mm-hmm.
And she just couldn't face it. She couldn't live it down. And I must say, Hollywood was not very nice to her.
Not from what I hear. And
you know,
there.
She needed help, and she never got it from Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. All
I mean,
was they just took from her.
They took from her, you know. And I still think that she was a very fine actress, but she didn't.
I agree with you. She's turned in some remarkable work in some of her films.
Yeah, but she didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And of course, the studio kept on pushing, you know, her as a sex goddess, always on the sex, never about any acting ability or things that she had done.
And she didn't like that.
And she didn't like it at all. But
she didn't want to play the blonde bimbo.
No, she didn't. She wanted to play other roles, which they never gave her.
Yeah, sounds like an early Elvis Presley in a way. Presley had talent, and Colonel Parker would never let him do anything with it.
That's true.
Just a kind of a crude parallel, but perhaps something there.
Well, the wind-up was that Presley paid for it with his life, you know?
Yeah.
And she, apparently did too. Apparently she just committed suicide, where the way he lived, he was committing suicide, you know?
Right, right. Any other names that come to mind? We just have a couple minutes left, Al, that you want to speak to.
Well, I have to tell you a funny story about Katie Hepburn.
Okay.
She had bought a mink coat in New York, you know, way before I knew her. But each summer she would store it in my fur store, you know, for the summer. So she came in one fall to pick up her mink coat, and she said to me, what is this black mist mink that I hear about? So she said, I'd like to see one. So I brought out a really nice black mist mink coat, and she looked at it, and she tried it on. And she said, how much is it? And I said, it's $9,500. She looked at me and said, you know, you'd have to be crazy to spend $9,500 for a mink coat. She said, and I'm not that crazy. She said, give me back my mink coat. that was a sale I didn't make, but I've never forgotten her.
That's a great line.
You know?
That's very funny.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
She said, I'm not that crazy.
Yeah. People used to come around, to the shop and just to talk with you, didn't they?
Yeah, and of course, one of the things that happened, which sometimes was very annoying, was you'd get people standing out in front waiting for an autograph, you know? And some of them would have the nerve to come into the store and annoy, you know, and we'd have to chase them out.
One of your visitors?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have an actress just come in, and they're in there, and we're trying to, you know, sell them a fur.
Right.
And you've got some idiot there shoving an autograph book in their face, and we had to throw them out. And some of them would get very nasty.
Well, I guess when you watch the films and you identify so thoroughly, even today kids do that, they feel as if they know you and you owe them some measure of reciprocity. It's a funny psychology.
Well, it is funny because you don't owe them anything, you know?
No, I follow that completely. When you think back on all the furs and all the coats, there must be still a lot of furs by Teitelbaum out there in storage, in carefully preserved, zippered, whatever they put furs in, Al, I would think, even after all these years.
Oh, I'm sure there are, you know. I mean, we made so many furs, you know. And then, of course, you know, I had the fur departments in other parts of the country. I had the 16 Joseph Magnin stores. I had the fur department in Philadelphia at Bonwit Tellers. We had in Houston.
Wow.
So you had our furs all over the country, you know.
How many films do you think you made furs for? Did you ever try to count them up?
I never tried to come up, but they were actually in the hundreds.
Sure. I asked you that at the beginning of the program. We're at the end now. Al, my friend, thank you for 3 hours. It's been really memorable. I know you've had a lot of people listening very intently tonight, and very much appreciation, I'm sure, is coming from those people. So I thank you very much.
Well, it's fun to bring back some of the memories for me, some of the things I haven't given any thought to for a good many years.
Well, we'll talk soon, my friend.
Okay, nice to talk to you, Jeff.
Okay, Al, good night.
Bye-bye.
What a nice man, huh? Mr. Al Teitelbaum, Furs by Teitelbaum. Next time you see the end of an old film, that's the man, Al Teitelbaum. We'll be back tomorrow.